Hello again. It's Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. My name, you guessed it, is Bill DeYoung. I'm here every Friday. And I am joined today by Troy Brooks and Georgia Mallory Guy from the Current Job Site Theater production of Martin McDonagh's The Pillow Man. And before I even get going, I want to read a comment by the playwright who says this, and I wanted to start here. Martin McDonagh says, "What I like about the play is that it won't fit into an easy box. It's messy and edgy and dark, and people are still able to appreciate it and accept it, or at least be provoked by it." That pretty much sums it up, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's a good generalized sort of statement of it all, I think, sort of a broad paint stroke of it.
Well, I would agree too.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, I think, maybe go into the show not really knowing exactly how visceral it's going to be.
No. Clearly, there have been many who have not come in knowing exactly how visceral it is.
On that note, let me ask you both, though. We were there during the Sunday matinee, and a couple got up and walked out.
Yeah.
Does that happen?
Yeah. We had one.
Especially on the Sunday matinees.
The Sunday matinees are the ones. The matinee crowd.
Okay.
Yeah. We had a moment where a woman mistook a door that was closer to the stage as an exit. The house management team was incredible after that. Like, they able to get her and get her out. But for a rare second, she sort of walked almost onto the stage without realizing where she was.
Is that like a badge of honor for a theater company? Like, hey, we really affected these people. And
I don't know if I'm allowed to say, but that woman did say that she was having
a panic attack. She was very affected by what she was saying.
Wow.
Yeah.
It wasn't just I was offended. It was like, it freaked me out.
Repelling this show.
Okay. But that being said, I mean, like, I think people who are listening, that is not the normal response of most people that sit and watch. I think that is the response of people who are not quite aware of what they're coming to and think they're coming to see children's fairy tales or something like that play out.
Well, let's clear this up for people. It is Martin McDonagh, of course, is the author of numerous places, a British-Irish playwright, The Beauty Queen of Lennon, which was a few seasons ago over in at job site, and had some disturbing bits in it. He walks the razor's edge between dark and satire. The Lieutenant of Inishmore, which I think they did as well. Mm-hmm. And also, wait for it, folks, in The Cinema, The Banshees of Inisherin, in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which won tons of Academy Awards, and my personal favorite, in Bruges. So this guy's been around. The Pillow Man, if you haven't seen it, and we'll just kind of dust this a little bit, takes place in a future, I guess a future totalitarian.
I don't necessarily know that it's future. Yeah. Okay. I sort of see it more as like an alternate universe, perhaps. Yes. Like, it is a totalitarian state that could exist in the time that we are living, clearly.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if McDonagh is saying it actually sort of does, and this is just a variation on a theme.
I think that's what he's saying. Yeah.
Couturier is a writer who has written a series of short stories, almost like fairy tales. They all start with Once Upon a Time, by the way, but they don't have happy endings for the children in the stories. Mm-hmm. They're fairly gruesome, and what's happened is Couturier, who's played by Ms. Guy over here, has been hauled in to the Hoosgow to talk to a couple of investigators investigating a real-life series of child murders that really, really parallel the stories. In a way, you guys, I think the Pillow Man is about censorship. You know, all Couturier wants to do is tell stories. You know, of course, they happen to be creepy and sick. But the powers that be don't want those stories to exist and then take that a little bit further. You know, in the present climate and you know, just in this century, let's just say that, you know, censorship is a hot button topic, and I think that's the way I interpreted it. Now, it does go to kind of extremes. I think it was Jeff Goldblum who did this on Broadway, who said it's also about the responsibility of the artist in today's society, you can't do. Let me start with you, Troy. Troy plays Michael, who is Couturier's younger brother, who is mentally challenged, but plays a pivotal role in this story. How did you approach this when you got this script? I mean, after the oh my God factor.
Oh, yeah. Well, funnily enough, I went to the Pinellas County Center for the Arts, and my teacher there for acting was Kevin Rankin. And one year,
I know Kevin,
formative
sure.
for me. He yeah. performed for my class Michael's monologue. That was the first my first experience with the Pillow Man with Martin McDonagh.
That's right up Kevin's
so,
alley.
Yeah. I knew from the jump what this was about.
Yeah.
And then got to read the play in its entirety during this audition process.
Yeah.
So I knew what it was going in, but to tackle this character, I knew would be I think this play is an epic for everyone involved, for the actors, for the crew, for the audience as well. And having to take on this character who I love so much. It took a lot from me. I'll say in the like audition process, this is a character, Michael, who has been put through years of torture by his parents.
Oh my God.
Has recovered from a traumatic brain injury, is mentally disabled and is childlike in nature. So I kind of dove deep into reports of child neglect and feral children, child abuse, and people who've recovered from traumatic brain injuries. It was not a very fun December that I had, but that gave me, because I loved this character. I love how he's written. He's so complex, and I wanted to do it authentically. I mean, it would be stepping on a lot of eggshells to do this with no like respect or feeling of authenticity of real life situations. I remember being very affected and fascinated by the story of Danielle Crockett, who this story broke maybe 15 years ago. The story of this girl in Plant City who had been kept in her room from early infancy to the point where she was 8 or 9. I feel like I almost like dedicate my performance to her.
Wow.
I was so moved when that story broke by the Tampa Bay Times. They won a Pulitzer for that story, for their reporting.
Wow. Well, we're familiar with you, obviously, your work with Outkast, with the Outkast Theater Collective. I think I first saw you in Something Clean
over at Off-Central.
The Off-Central. You've done a lot of stuff. You were in Ragtime. You were in The Figs. Were you in The Figs at American Stage?
I never got to perform in The Figs.
I couldn't remember. I saw it in your bio, but I said, I don't remember him.
I was technically in the cast, so I get to put world premiere of the...
But you weren't in Ring of Fire.
Yes.
And you were out there singing and a hooting and a hollering and all that stuff. What was that like? I mean, that's 180 to go to Michael that.
I did have Macbeth in between that. So that
you
was
did
nice
Macbeth as well,
of,
yeah.
And I'm going to call this section of my career the Porter Trilogy because Ring of Fire ended with the song Hey Porter. There's the character of the Porter in Macbeth, and one of our cast members is named Porter. It's this weird kind of going on.
Yeah. Porter was amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Porter's there and not there anymore, but very green. Mm-hmm. That's what we can say. Georgia, your turn. Tell me, you know, how you approach this. I can't believe how busy you are. I mean, I was talking to you. You were doing Matt and Ben over at Freefall. Yeah. Do you remember this? And I said, oh, you're doing the Pillow Man. Yes, I am. And it seems like, you know, in the last year, between Think Tank, she is the artistic director of Think Tank Theater, which you knew already, Troy, but I'm telling the world out there, and the acting work you do, you're very busy.
I like being busy.
Is this something you wanted to do, the Pillow Man? Oh, please let me do Couturier.
I mean, yeah, if they were going to, you know, if they were going to consider making Couturier a female versus, you know, how it's actually written, it's written as a male character, but McDonagh has opened the doors for any character in Pillow Man to be played by the opposite gender and, you know, whatever capacity it wants. So I was like, I mean, this might be the only time by the only company that would be willing to take a risk this way. I want to throw my name in the ring for it. And have really, really worked on the audition material.
Yeah.
Came in and did the scenes that they wanted to see, talked with David extensively afterwards about like what sort of, it just really sort of fell in line with the time frame that I had between Matt and Ben, and then being able to do the show, and then immediately rolling into directing the next thing for Think Tank. It was like the absolute perfect timing. So it was like, if this can work, I want to do it.
Did you have any problem with the material? Like, wow, man, this, some of this stuff is pretty twisted.
No. I actually, the only thing that we talked about as a, as an ensemble was that it's written actually for far more violence in the first act. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have three men, that's a different dynamic. And no matter how petty or perhaps egotistical Couturier might be, you still, I don't think, can accept watching two men hit a female.
That would be Topolsky and Ariel just whacking a woman
and
around.
I just don't think, even as much as you might want her to get slapped around, you just can't. You can't go there.
I thought Couturier was kind of a smart ass, but I didn't think, first of all, I was horrified by the whole thing.
Of course.
And one can agree that there is a certain sort of, when it's done so well and in such a literary fashion that there is a certain entertainment value in that, but I sure didn't. I saw you when you came, she has blood on her, folks. We'll just leave it there. I saw that and I'm going, wow, look at how they did that. I think you turned around and suddenly there's blood all over you. We'll say it. Ariel kind of whacks you into something.
He kind of tosses me off balance. And the way we staged it was he tosses me off balance and then it causes me to fall into a piece of furniture.
Yeah. So, but in the script, there's more than that.
Actually pops the mess out of Couturier. We were like, we can't do this. So any of the violence that is suggested in the script happens off stage and through the intermission tort breaks and things like that.
Tell the audience, not all. again, no spoilers here, folks, but this show is pretty intense. The scene that you guys do together is a really long scene. Was this a three-act play, I thought, when it was written? Was that act two?
Yep. So it is a three-act play, but that does not mean it is a two-intermission play. Mm-hmm. The interval, as it's called in more European texts, is taken after the scene between Michael and Couturier.
That's kind of what I thought and going into it. You guys, tell me, if you will, about the dynamics of working out that scene. This is between Michael and Couturier, and Michael, who uses the Irish word arse the time, which I thought was great. You know, I was nudging Amy, going, hey, it's arse, you know.
That was the only other thing that we changed is
some Britishisms.
Britishisms. It's not supposed to take place in Ireland or Britain, but because of the playwright and where he's from, there were a lot of Britishisms in the play that we've exercised. I actually went on and added some Britishisms into at least one.
That's when you said, bloody hell. Yeah, no, I'm kidding. You didn't really say, I don't think you really said that. What did you tell me?
We liked saying arse. I know. Arse. And then we just made a pirate bit. Like, it was a pirate-y joke they said to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Found sort of a brother-sister connection in it. Yeah.
The line was, I don't know what you're going on about. And I just thought it sounded better as I don't know what you're on about.
Oh, that's very British. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. The pirate, it was funny because I had read the script. Here's the thing. I think I told you this. And David had sent it to me because I didn't want to go in there and I don't do well with, violence or suggestion of violence. So I wanted to know what I was going into before I talked to anybody. And, I did a story with Paul Potenza and Stephen Sean Garland, who play the detectives, before I saw it, but I had already read it. And I remember thinking that this is awful stuff. It's a comedy.
It is a comedy. Yeah.
I saw it. I didn't get that until I saw you guys doing it. When I read it, I was frankly horrified. Oh my God, it's violent. These people, not you guys. You guys are great, but those guys are awful. But Paul in particular brings the comedy out. He told me that. He said you have to see it.
Oh yeah, there is. I think there's something inherent. Like any good play, it's not meant to be read as one reads a book, right? So it's meant to be heard. Mm. And you can't get the essences of the comedic elements of it unless you hear the rhythms in that are dictated on the page. And so I think, like, in terms of asking, you know, between the scene between me and Troy, one of the great things about it is at a certain point, like, we stopped trying to make anything happen or trying to, like, count the beats or the changes.
Right.
We just said the words. Yeah. And we talked to each other, and we would find the energy by the way it's written on the page. I mean, the pauses are even written in. Like, he wants you to pause here. Mm-hmm. He wants you to say these lines back to back, one off of each other, like, pick up your cues until you get to here. And if you do that, like, you're reading a piece of music, when you get the music memorized and you put it away, you're not acting anymore. You're actually talking to each other like these characters,
right.
And the tempos are there and they're set and they're going, and you feel the audience with you when they laugh with certain things, with the way you react, with the, you know, so it's all like there. You just trust it at a point. It just works.
Yeah, that was the key. Katurian and Michael are siblings. They may not have grown up together in the traditional sense, but we had to have a real, like, sibling dynamic. Like, we've been talking like this for ages.
Right.
Yeah.
I got that. I totally got that. And I think that, I think what you're saying is that the comedy just comes out.
It does.
In the dialogue.
Yeah.
It's even between the two, there's, you know, it's tragic, it's awful, but there's some funny.
I mean, it's in the way they banter. Talk to each other. It's like way, I mean, the rhythm of it, where it's like, Will, did you? Yes. Will, did you? Yes. Will, did you? I'm not trying to give away anything, but in that moment, they're actually saying really awful things, but the audience laughs. And that's the other thing, too. I think if the audience realizes they can laugh early on, we've had some houses, especially on Friday and Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, when they realize they can laugh, my God, the way it just erupts. And I think when you talk about censorship a little bit, like, tying it back for just a second, it's like, can you do this on stage? You can, but the only way it works is if you don't play the darkness of it. You try to find, how do you make the darkness light? You don't smear extra darkness on it. You try to, like, lift it to a place that finds the comedic moments by keeping it light and positive, whatever that means. And then people realize they don't have to censor their own laughter at this really dark stuff.
They get permission.
Do it. Yeah.
It's that whole thing about tension and release.
Yes,
though, right?
Absolutely.
It? It's like, you bring them here and then bring in and bring them like that. You know, you can feel that from the audience. You guys have had pretty good houses on this
meant
show.
To be a cathartic release in the sense of, like, you could look at it and go, oh, I can't, I don't think I can do this. But at the same time, it's like, if you allow yourself to go, okay, this is a little dark, but it's funny. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not meant to, like, make you explore your own inner demons. It's actually make you laugh at the extreme of the
absurdity.
This is blown out of proportion.
I totally get that.
That was a big lesson that I had to learn myself. Uh-huh. That was the biggest thing that I had to overcome in this production, is, like he said, like, reading this on the page. When I went into that callback, and I read that scene over and over so many times that I went into that callback off book. But I think I got a little too deep into, like, embodying that character of Michael, and I treated it like it was a tragedy. I was wrecked every time I had to do it those first few rehearsals. And then David took me aside and it's like, this is not going to work if you are this shattered and victimized and vulnerable. Michael is a pain in the ass. Michael is a brat. He has some pettiness to him. Every character in this show is kind of a bit of a petty asshole. They're all kind of on an equal.
Yeah, there's
all
no
so
good
much
people.
On an equal playing field. But yeah.
But isn't that true? A little bit. I mean, I know, again, like, McDonough blows it out, like, so that you see the extremes of it, but we're not all good people all the time.
We're not?
You know?
No.
I mean, we're really not. I was grouchy this morning. I snapped at a coworker. Didn't mean to. You know, it is. It's just one of those, like, but, I mean, at the center of it, we are good people. I also think that's the other thing. It blows up. We're not doing what these people are doing.
No.
You know?
Well, what I noticed from the audience is you know, a little tittering in the beginning, and then it was almost like they understood, yeah, we can laugh. And then it was almost like a release valve after a while, especially as it gets really dark.
Yeah.
You know, and suddenly you hear these, like, I don't know, it went from tittering to chuckles to guffaws, you know, and sometimes they would laugh at things I didn't think were funny. You know, it's like that was just a trap. Look at what that person just said. Oh, God.
That is fascinating to see, like, what they react to each every night.
Oh, yeah.
It's so different every night.
Oh, it is different.
Right, right.
Yeah. Like, what's going to land and what isn't going to land and what lands that you're like, that has never landed before.
I know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's also funny to see what takes the wind out of it. Like what's the gut punch that gets the audience? There are a couple that we know that we expect to land, mm-hmm. just like there are a couple that we expect will have laughter. And so we wait, we give it that second to see if the laughter's going to come. It doesn't, we just keep going. But if it's there, we let them, you know, sit in that laughter for a moment because they need it. Mm-hmm. They need it. And we need it too, in some extent, to like feel that flow of the dialogue and how it sort of goes. It's a fun roller coaster ride every time we do it.
I think it was Mo Howard from the Three Stooges who said there was this very thin line between tragedy and comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it might have been Larry. But anyway, somebody said that. We're going to say goodbye now to Troy Brooks and Georgia Mallory Guy from Jobsite Theater's production of Martin McDonagh's The Pillow Man, which will be on stage through April 6th. Jobsite Theater, of course, is the resident theatrical company of the Strass Center for the Performing Arts. Look how fast I said that. In Tampa. Go to jobsitetheater.org to find out how you, too, can experience The Pillow Man. Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.